This is J.D. Cole. This is December 4th, and I'm talking to Mr. Bill Burton.
Okay. All right. I'm going to write this to you. Let's see it. Make you nervous. Well, Mr. Burton, tell us a little bit about your background. What brought you, well, why brought you in the ranch?
Well, my father had a ranch in Florida.
In Florida?
Right. Yeah, we had a place at Lake Muskapoga, which is about the center of the state, just north of Okeechobee, about 6 miles.
Yeah.
And, we raised Bramer cattle. I went to University of Florida and majored in animal husbandry, and I married my animal.
And your wife's name is
Kathy.
Kathy, okay.
I met Kathy at the University of Florida. I went in the Navy, and then, of course, while I was going to the University of Florida, my oldest brother always wanted to go visit Alaska. And he talked to my next older brother, Jim. And got Jim excited. Well, Jim had just got out of the Navy and graduated from the University of Florida. So while I was going there, he said, well, it's going up. So during summertime, we'd go look to Alaska. I came up there 3 different times while I was in school.
What year was this about?
57, 58, and 59.
Okay.
Or 58, 59, and 60 it was.
Okay.
After we came up here, we worked out of Fairbanks and construction and stuff. Then I went in the Navy, and after I got out of the Navy, my brother wrote to me, Jim did, and he was looking to get back into ranching, and he majored in animal, my husband, too. So he was in Montana, and he said, why don't you come on over and we'll look? And so I did. Kathy and I, we drove to Montana, and I worked on a ranch there. I was Allison Gateway, which there for years, and really enjoyed it. Beautiful area, and real nice stuff.
I heard that they wrote deer out there.
I never wrote deer. I don't know.
I knew some friends that were that worked some ranches up there in Texas, and he would go up there every once in a while. That's what these two guys. They were a team up there, and they traveled up there in Montana up there, and they were telling stories about roping deer. I was going, yeah, all right.
I could have roped a deer out here, but I'd heard stories about guys roping deer, because I didn't have somebody to feel. And I understand it. They hit the end of the rope and they're right back at you. And
yeah.
A handful, so I never wanted
to. Anyway, so you were in Montana and you were working.
Yeah, I worked there, and then Jim went back up to Alaska. Working construction, of course, you can't make any money working for a ranch. They don't have the money to pay. I was making, back then, top dollar for it. It was $400 a month and a room and meat. And that was good money back then, but still, you're not making anything. And so he wrote to me, he said, well, come on back up there and make some money. So I did. Went back up there and I worked construction. And at the end of the season, I heard about the ranches here in Kodiak. There was an old timer up there. And he knew about the ranches. And I went and talked with him. And he gave me the names of all the different ranchers down here. And he had them. And so I wrote to them all. And they said, well, come on down. Come on down and see what you think. So I did. I came down and I worked on this place first.
You came out, you just did you fly out here, or did you come on?
No, I came on the ferry. I think I came down and I drove a car down, I believe, and came on the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for Joe Beatty, who owned this ranch here. And I just fell in love with it. It was a beautiful fall and everything. And it was a bad mistake calling for it.
You know, I tell you what, I really like this out there, coming out through here. I think compared to Chinyak and No Holds Barred, I think the Fast Track is probably the most beautiful drive coming out here. Both me and my wife, we've gone out to Chinyak maybe a couple of times, but we always come back to the Fast Track coming out this way.
Well, this country reminds me of the country at Montana. It looks like the high country in Montana, and actually they're not. They're low country. The mountains and everything go up just almost identical and everything. Of course, you were starting at 5,000 feet down there. Here you start to sea level. So
That's right.
So I don't know. I came down here, and I really liked it. And Kathy came down, and I've been working for Joe for a couple of months, I guess. When she came down, she brought her little poodle down with us, you know. And he was had a real mania for cleanliness. This place, he kept it just super clean. He could beat off the floors, but the kitchen, he always put papers down. So when you walked in, you know, so it was always full of papers. I washed the dishes, and he generally cooked, and about half the time, he wound up washing dishes after me. I'm pretty clean. Well, anyway, Kathy came down, and we had that little poodle, and he said, I don't want that poodle in the house. Well, it was down about 10 degrees or so. So she brought him in that one night, so he fired me the next day.
Really?
Oh, no. Everybody went over to Joe Zittner's place, right there for Shag Shack, and stayed there for about a week, and rode back and get the Shag Shack. And then we had planned to go in south anyway for Christmas time, and we went down to see the folks. So we drove down to Florida and went down there.
All the way from
here.
From here.
Yeah, and it was during right at Christmas time. We got over there and it was 50 below, 55 below, right there, 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it was really cold.
Yeah.
I had all kinds of problems. But anyway, while I was down there, Homer Stratton, next door neighbor over there at the house, gave me a call. A fellow was working for him, Don Becker, who eventually owned the ranch at Middle Bay.
Yeah.
He had fallen and ruptured himself, and he was working for Owen. So he asked if I'd be willing to come up and work for him for a short period of time. So he got somebody. I said, yeah, so I came on up. And I wrote my brother and told him about these places, so he came down too. And while I was working for Owen, I got through, and then I worked in town construction for a while. And Joe Beatty came and talked to us the other night and said, would you guys like to buy it? Like, it made a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
At least we thought it was a good deal. It was more than either one of us could top off the bid.
Right.
But we pooled our resources and our wife's family's resources, our family's resources and everything, and we came up with enough money for a down payment and made a loan with the state of Alaska.
So you established yourself about when?
1967 when we bought it.
Uh-huh.
I think that's probably about June. I'm not sure. I might have been a little early. And Jim moved on to the place, Jim and Tony Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony had a daughter that same year, Andrew Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed out here for about 3 years, I think, and then they swapped. And then they worked on the slope. I was working construction up on the slope. Or wherever, and I did.
Mm-hmm. You know, I found out that a lot of people did that, even and still do.
Yeah.
They'll still go up and work on the slope, working, like construction, work on the roads and things like that, making roads up there, and they make extra money.
Well,
send it back.
Fell that way over there. Well, not now. And we sold Buffalo to what's his name, Kathy? Dave Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a job on the slope for the oil company up there. Want 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. He makes enough money that he's got 160 acres there. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
All kinds of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his buffalo and greenhouse and everything. Just does it all through money to make money.
So you're not the only one that deals with the buffalo, right?
No, I sold him buffalo.
Oh, okay. Now, you have other cattle here besides buffalo, right?
I've only got, right now, about 80 head of cattle. We're down to stopped Bill from the cattle, and we're building up on the buffalo. We get about 180 head of buffalo.
What made you decide on a buffalo?
Well, we fought the bear problem since we bought it, 1967 through 1980, and of course we had Jim and I bought Jim out about that time, probably 1979 or 1978, and he could see the handwriting on the wall, wasn't making money, so he got out. And then I bought the buffalo about that time. Now, we had a friend of ours, he used to come over every year to go deer hunting and whatever, and come out to the place, Steve Lewis. And he's real good friends with Frank Bishop here in town. And, of course, Frank is a tremendous hunter. And they came out here and they went fishing back in Sacramento, too, for Soviets. And he'd been coming over for two or three years, and one year he brought us some buffalo roast in the state. That he killed a buffalo from Delta.
Right.
And he said, you ought to get into buffalo. So you wouldn't have any problems with a bear if you had buffalo.
Is the buffalo, they'll stand up, they'll stand up to them, or
I think mainly is that they're more of a herd animal. They're still a wild animal.
Uh-huh.
More like horses. A band of horses now, every now and then somebody will lose a horse on the island of bears, but not very often.
Uh-huh.
They're faster and they're more alert, and they're usually given a chance to be half a dozen horses together,
uh-huh.
Even a horse by itself is a super alert animal. And they're just more alert. Now, cattle are pretty dumb.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting because I think cows have got to be pea brain. And they have got to be as dumb as dirt.
About the only thing dumber than cattle are maybe sheep and the people that raise the cattle.
Mm.
That's the it took me 20 years to find that out. My level of intelligence is not too high either.
I think that looking for other alternatives and options. I think with the bear problem, that's the main thing. One of the questions I was going to ask you: have you ever seen one of the buffaloes ever stand off a bear or anything like that?
No. I've seen cattle or cows chased by a bear, and only once.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time, Now, we've taken some tremendous cattle losses to bear over the years. We were taking about an average at least 25 per year for a long period of time.
Wow.
And one year we lost over 100 head of stock.
Huh.
We had about 700 head of cattle at the time, but that's a lot.
Yeah, it is, and you just can't.
You can't stay in business.
Yeah.
Keep taking those kind of losses. And plus, you got some other losses. You'll take some winter losses.
Is the winter here a major factor for buffalo compared to cattle?
No, the cattle or the buffalo do real well. You're going to have to feed the cattle some usually. You've got to feed all your young stock, the cattle. Same with horses. You've got to feed your horses up until about two or so. But after that, a horse you don't have to feed at all. Cow you don't either if it's dry or a steer. But when they're heavy or when they have a big cap on them all summer long when they're going into the winter, sometimes they're going into the winter a little poorer, so we're going to need them. And there's plenty of grass. We got lots of grass. The problem is, again, the bear doesn't allow you to utilize it efficiently. If we could utilize it like they do down in South 48, we didn't say we didn't have the predation like they do down there.
Yeah.
We didn't have the predation here like they don't have down there.
Right.
Well, then you could utilize a ranch as a real good cattle ranch. You wouldn't have to feed very much.
Uh-huh.
We got a lot of pasture land up in these mountains and the valleys.
It's rich grass.
And it doesn't get utilized because of the bear. Now, we have in the past utilized it when we took those losses, some big losses of cattle. And so whichever way you do it, you either take losses to the bear, killing them while you have them up there and saving your winter range, or you keep them on your winter range and have to feed. So one way or another, you're losing.
Okay.
And it's with the buffalo, we haven't quite had that problem because the buffalo have gone migrated where they want to. They don't pay attention to our fences for the cattle.
Will the buffalo go right over the fence?
Right over whatever, take it down. Now, the electric fence, they abide by that. And that's why we're going all electric eventually, but it's taking a while. You know, there's a lot of fence. I got 30 miles of fence or better. And I don't have maybe a couple, 3 miles of electric fence. So.
Now, you were saying something about them migrating and stuff like that. How do you keep them fenced in? Then? How do you the electric on your outer boundaries? How do you keep them from?
Well, we have the Marin Mountain Range pretty much formed our one boundary, and then the Gulf of Alaska forms another. The only place where we have any problems on the two ends of the ranch. One of them where the road comes through, and they will go back and forth there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we do have fences there, but we got to get some good electric fences there and some better cattle guards. The other end is Chiniac area, and it's pretty much got some real deep canyons and a lot of timber, and the buffalo so far outside of one animal went over there this year. The only time we ever had a buffalo go off that way.
Now, is your buffalo, are they like wild, or can you?
I feed them some during the winter now, a little bit. I feed them some regular range pellets, cattle pellets, to help where I can move them around and stuff. Now, we move them on horseback, and you can move a buffalo any place they want to go. It's just if they don't want to go, you can't move them.
So, have you ever had, what kind of situations have you had that, like that?
Well, anytime you get them close, where you want to try to push them in the corral, you can't push them in a corral on horseback. You can get them up to it, and then you can lead them in with these, possibly. Or, like they do down in some of the bison ranges and stuff, they have a long neck where their lead, where they're going in. And then once they get them kind of going into that lead, then they come in with vehicles. Like rails in front of them, uh-huh. And push them
push
in that
them
way.
In there.
Yeah. You get them in a corral or in an enclosed area, you got a real care. You can't put a horse in anything like that. I don't faster your horses. I can move them. They might chase you, but you got to, you get away. Mm-hmm. But you get in an enclosed area, you kill a horse.
So they're a lot more aggressive than the river cattle.
They're essentially a wild animal that we've learned to manipulate. They still have their wild sense, which is why they've done real well with the bear.
Well, they're okay. They've been around a long, long time. Yeah. Probably,
They're, the Indians were, I think, real correct. They talked about the white man's cattle as inferior. Definitely they're superior, I think, than the beef animal, because the beef animals had all the smarts spread out.
Mm-hmm.
They really have. Mm-hmm. Plus the fact that the buffalo is really superior meat.
Really?
Oh, I think so, it's by far. It doesn't have the fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's lower in cholesterol than any other red meat, including most of the other game animals,
mm-hmm.
Including fish and chicken. So health-wise, it's a lot healthier food than beef, and especially, and don't get me wrong, I was raised in the cattleman, I went through school, mm-hmm. An animal husbandry, I know what the cattlemen and the feedlot operators are having to put up with and everything. They have to rely on antibiotics. Any time you get a whole bunch of animals and have to put them in an enclosed area,
yeah.
You've got to do something to prevent disease.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can do that is low level of antibiotics. And then also, you have to be able to make a profit on them, so we have to go with the different hormones and whatever to get on the fat. Because once you steer an animal, you got away with his hormones to actually cause it to grow. And so they use these hormones that cause it to fat. And that produces fat meat. Not necessarily, U.S. Choice, they've gone from U.S. Prime to Choice. A lot of them are going to good. another X, but still, what they're shooting for is a meat that has a lot of marbling.
Mm-hmm.
And that marbling is nothing but fat interspersed in the meat. So you still have a fat meat, you know. And that's...
And buffalo are pretty firm.
Buffalo don't have any marbling.
Mm-hmm.
They might get some outside cover in a young animal. A young bull have a little bit of outside cover, and I know the cows probably do, especially young heifers.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we had children on cows, so I couldn't tell you about that.
Well, how many do you have here on the ranch?
Roughly about 180 right now.
180.
We're a little short of that. We had some hunt. And that's the way we've been pretty much selling our buffalo for the last 3 or 4 years or 4 or 5 years. Just buffalo hunting. Total animal.
How many approximate bulls do you have?
Well, I'd have to look this thing up. I've got right now about 16 or 18 older bulls left. Bulls that would make a hunt. Then we've got a whole bunch of young ones.
What do you mean hunt? You mean actually going out and actually hunt them?
Yeah, we take them out. We have trophy hunts, and we have one called meat hunt. And a trophy hunt will be a... anywhere from an 8 to a 10 or 11, 12-year-old bull, or a 6-year-old. Because they're looking for the head. Now, this here was a big bull right here, and so the head would usually be bigger than that, and the horns are better.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, if people are looking for a trophy, they want a nice head, essentially what they're looking for. So we have at least another 16 or so of those around. They get to meet with it, unless they don't want it, then we can make a, you know, now we're charging $3,500 for a trophy hunt, $2,500 for a meat hunt. There's one doctor, he got a bull this year, and it's like weight, right at about 1,000 pounds hanging weight, and it's $3 a pound. That's $3,000, so this hunt is costing.
So do they have a real hard time getting into, or do you know pretty much about where they are?
Well, we've been fairly lucky this year. They were, most of them, fairly close. But, you know, I don't know for sure where the bulls are. Sometimes they're in Sacramento. Sometimes they're in any one of the valleys, or they're over towards the Shack, out on the Cape, or the valleys in between. And usually we just take them on horseback, and we go find the bulls and kind of look at them, and they're interested. I try to do it as a regular hunt, because they will go from you. But a buffalo, even in the wild, although I think those in Delta are probably a little bit harder. But like you reading this buffalo book, and the library might read that pretty book. Those old-time hunters, they get downwind, get in the stand, and they might kill 60-head buffalo.
Well, let me ask you something. This is going to compare to, I'm going to kind of compare, how do you, since you know a little bit more about animal husbandry than I ever thought about, how do they live? I'm living as close to Texas as I have. I know a little bit about buffalo, but the big thing is the longhorn. How do they stack up against the like the longhorn meat-wise, and as you were talking about earlier, about you know, with all the antibiotics and things like that. How do they stack up like that?
Well, I don't know the thing of longhorn. They probably, they fatten them out too. Buffalo, I don't think, now they do fatten some buffalo out. There's some places down in the States that do fatten them out on corn. So, I don't know if they marble when they do that or not. I don't think they do. I think that's one of the signs. Of course, there's another thing, they don't steer them. And steering definitely makes an animal fatten out if you add an extra feed. Your bull has the hormones that cause meat growth, or, you know, growth of, but not necessarily makes them fat. Buffalo, yeah, I don't know anything especially too much about longhorns, although we had a couple longhorns here too. I think they're probably, again, you go back to the natives, and to go back to the Indian. I thought mm-hmm. I should go back to the plainsmen or to the frontiersmen, the mountain men. They preferred it way over beef. And I think once a person eats a little bit of buffalo compared to beef, I prefer it way over beef. In fact, that's all we eat in the buffalo. It's generally, like I say, we kill 3 or 4 year old bulls and they're nice and tender. Of course, we do hang them. Our 8, 9, and 10 year old trophy bulls, we hang those for about 2 weeks in the cooler, and those things are nice and tender. Now, you take an 8 or 9 year old beef bull, that's out on the range with the eager out on the range, and you shoot one, and that's going to be tougher than hell. At least with my thing before, it's always been that way. That's why people don't eat bull. Now, that's not as entirely true either, because over in Europe, they do eat bull. But they eat a young bull, a 1 or 2 year old bull.
But it means nice, it's not tough.
And they keep it away from, so it's not bullet, And they just raise them together.
I understand.
And it makes good meat. There's nothing wrong with bull. Mm-hmm. It's not fat. But see, people in the United States have been educated.
That's right.
They eat right. Fat meat. And that the fatter it is, the more tender it is, and the more flavorful. There is a little bit correlation to flavor to fat. Fat carries a flavor in it. Mm-hmm. But the buffalo, without the fat, I guarantee you, it's just as flavorful as any beef.
How successful have you been, since you've established it here and they're doing really well, apparently? How many have you lost to, like, bear problem?
I know of one, for sure, that I lost, and probably at least two of the others that I lost to bear, some young people. And they were ones that were brought over, now Hollenbeck of the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
He bought some buffalo and he brought them down here. He didn't have a place ready at the time to have any buffalo up there, so he brought them down here and he brought that one year he bought 5 yearlings and brought them down. And we lost all of them. One to bear, I know, and three of them were killed.
You're on Kodiak.
Three of them were killed by two-legged bear over there where that's been.
A two-legged bear?
Yeah. We had two-legged bears, too, that killed cattle.
Oh, well, I understand what you're saying now. I understand. You're talking about
they boned them out. I mean, just did a beautiful job of boning them and whatever. I don't know. Whoever did it knew what they were doing.
Has that been a problem too, two-legged bear, you think?
We might have lost a few head of buffalo, possibly. I know we've lost cattle. So is Homer Stratman and all the other ranchers. On the road system, the closer you get to town or where the main road goes through, they've lost a lot of cattle in years past.
That's interesting. I never really thought about it. I wouldn't think about, that the man element being a factor.
Do you think it?
And I don't want to seem prejudiced, but did you ever find out who it was or established?
Could have
been possibly been.
No. There was one time that we had an animal that was boned out again over there by at Bow Bay or bear paw.
Right.
But it was up as you come up the road. There's a bunch of timber up there where there's a little canyon right over there. You shot it and went down in the canyon and boned it out and walked back and forth through the snow and down. I just happened to ride and then I found the track and followed what it did. Found the track to the vehicle and I called the troopers and they came out. They had a pretty good idea. They wouldn't let me know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they ever caught. We did have somebody that was caught one time stealing an animal. It happened to be a goat. I had $1,000 reward, and the guy that turned him in got $1,000 reward. He found out later they were in cahoots. And the judge didn't give the guy any, he gave him something like, 5 or 10 days of time that he could serve at his leisure. God, I feel like he had a place to stay and free meals and stuff.
Is it still a problem?
I'm sure we lose some. Homer Stratman, I know, still loses some on the road system, and people come out, not necessarily maybe just as guilty, but they come out spotlighting. We have a lot of that, spotlighting deer,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. on the road system, and if there's a calf or a deer or a cow or possibly even a buffalo, I don't think they're at first killing anything.
So now you're telling me that it's not necessarily the bear. You kind of solved the bear problem.
I haven't really solved the bear problem. They haven't been
as aggressive,
as bad as the buffalo. Yeah, but it still limits my pushing them in certain ranges and stuff. You know, the buffalo just won't go in the area.
Is it higher ground because of the mountains and things?
The buffalo we have are the plains buffalo, and I think they're more at home in open areas. I would like to get some wood buffalo,
I didn't know there was a difference. Where would you go to get some of that?
Well, they have them in Canada, and there's one fellow that I know in D.C., Danny Nolan, and he's raising some wood buffalo, and I'd like to get some senior farming or
I don't think we can
artificially breed some buffalo, but maybe a I wouldn't mind getting a couple heifers too, keep them separate and all. I wouldn't mind crosses. They're bigger.
They are.
Bigger animal. They stand a little taller, probably 6 to 8 inches taller, and they're bigger all the way around the animal. And they do go to the mountains more. In fact, the wood buffalo and the mountain buffalo, according to this buffalo book, were essentially the same buffalo. The buffalo in Yellowstone Park were a mountain buffalo. And then the few that were saved when they did save the buffalo, there were a few mountain buffalo, and they were just having to get a mountain and they killed off. But they brought in plains buffalo to do it down there since the plains buffalo. But the woods buffalo up in northern Canada, they had a pretty good sized herd. They did bring in, plains buffalo and diluted that down, but there are still some woods buffalo further north of Canada that have been included. We've got a problem there with brucellosis. They're talking about killing the whole herd and stuff.
Well, being from Oklahoma, I see buffalo all the time. And you're actually right, it's plains buffalo. I didn't know that there was a difference between the two. Do you think that definitely the two, because I guess it's size. Do you think it might be because of what they eat, or is it just that's how they're genetically made? Being out here so far, is that a problem? Being away from town and things like that?
No, I kind of like it. In fact, we're getting people kind of closer when Joe's in there and sold his place over there, subdivided by certain shack tax now. But there's a lot of people moving in. It was nice when it was just Joe and then Homer. That was our 2 year neighbors, period. Going to town, you always have to be prepared, you know, the weather, especially the roads and stuff. There's only been a couple times when we couldn't get in, or from snow or something. One time we had a big. One time it was about 10 degrees and we had maybe about 6 or 8 inches of snow on the ground. And we got about 100 knot winds.
Mm-hmm.
And it filled up our shed out there in the corral. It filled those completely up so we could walk on the snow to the top of the shed. And I happened to have both my loaders at that time in the shed. And there's a gate out here where you come through, the one that had to open the big one.
Yeah.
There was snow drift almost all the way to that house.
All the way there.
And there was big snow drifting come around here with the greenhouse and brush and stuff. We couldn't get out of the yard with this equipment crew. And I didn't have any equipment to clean it out, so I was completely pulled up. Now, a couple of weeks, we were pretty well bound on horseback or...
That's a heck of a snowstorm. That's a lot of snow. It's different. The weather here is a lot different than what we had in the interior. It was a lot dry.
Mm-hmm.
and but it stayed cold all the time, it didn't melt. And it got to like grains of salt.
Yeah.
Or your sugar. You're like a big sugar cup.
It's hard.
Yeah. And you try to move one load, you have this, and you're just piling it up. It's where are you gonna put it? There's more snow, you know. But anyway.
One of the advantages of buffalo is that during the wintertime, of course, they utilize forage a lot more efficiently than beef cattle do.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, beef cattle probably utilize grain more efficiently, but we're essentially a forage farm, you might say. And that's what we have that we have the most of. And one of their big advantages is why they had that big beard. If they use that to sweep down through the snow, and they'll dig down through the snow, even if it's crusted over, they'll break it up with their horns and get down, and it'll look like a bunch of hogs have been wallowed all over out in the snow, and cattle will follow them and get down to it. Horses will dig down, but cattle won't dig down at all. Cattle will starve to death if it's covered with snow. Oh, they will. And so that's the one big advantage. Of course, the other big advantage is that we needed something. You know, we'll get along with a bear instead of trying to eliminate the bear. Because, first place, we weren't very efficient at eliminating the bear. And second place, I don't really want to eliminate them anyway.
Right.
And I tell you, I'm reading this. That's a good book. I haven't read it. I just got it. And it's written...
Kill the Cowboy.
Yeah. And it's written by this gal who was a university gal down somewhere. But it's...
Is it Sherman F. Russell? Yeah. Is that the author?
This gal is right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's it. That's her name, Sherman.
It's written about the ecological groups that are trying to get rid of the cattle off the western range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cow-free in 93 and... you know, there's groups that don't want to see any cattle on any of the Forest Service land, or any of the parks, or any BLM land, for that matter. Any federal land, or even state land parks and stuff, they don't want to see cattle on them. Of course, historically, it's been there. So, when they formed these different forest preserves and everything, the cattlemen had advantage that they had been there, so they, when they formed these forest preserves, parks and whatever else, they had it granted that they could go ahead and get the lease on them, you know, to run cattle on them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now all these different groups are trying to get the cattle off. I mean, you know, there's Friends of the Earth and all these
groups. Yeah.
And they got some truth, or they got some good ideas on some of it. I mean, some of it has been overgrazed, and a lot of these different parks and whatever were set apart to save the wildlife, and yet you have cattle up there eating down the grass, or what's bad is where they're on the riparian areas or the water, the creeks and whatever, and they eat that down, and it causes the creeks to lose whatever cover it has, and so the creek warms up and there's no trout and whatever else. So there's some benefits of what they're trying to do, and this gal, I think, kind of brings it out. I mean, that we need to be able to accommodate all the people, including ranchers.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose them, you've lost a complete way of life, you know. And, but you have to be able to fit in the ecology. And I think that's one of the reasons why we went to Buffalo, to figure out if it would possibly be able to accommodate get along with the bear enough where we wouldn't have to completely wipe out the bear.
And still make a business out of it, make a profit. I think that's a wise choice. I think that's I mean, it's, yeah. I think it's neat. I think it's, you're taking something that's been here lot longer than man has ever, you know, they have adapted. They've been in the ecosystem for a long time. One thing is, though, you know, I don't know if they've been on the island,
no.
This particular island you're bringing in, but at the same time, you're looking at something that's been pretty resilient, that's lived for, you know, that's got a good history or past, and then you brought them into a system where, you know, they're able to adapt, they're very adaptable, and they're able to be in harmony with the bear.
Well, and of course, the other side of the coin is, too, that right now, at least with the cattle, and I think that's probably true most of the last, because you're competing with South 48, and you have to put a high cost feed in your animals up there, and you're getting a low cost product, whether it's cattle or pigs or whatever else, domestic animals. Whereas with a buffalo or elk, people raising elk, when Bill Ward raising elk, I like to raise elk too.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about goals, but eventually I'd like to make this a wildlife ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to raise buffalo and elk.
Now, do you have to have permits for doing that? I mean, do you have to have, like you did with the buffalo, did you have to have permits when you bought it?
Yeah, we had to get permits to get them up there to the state. And yes, I'd have to, you have to, with the elk, you have to abide by their fences in order to raise them. You can't let them get off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the buffalo, there's been no other animals up there like buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the animals we brought in were clean. They had to be. Bring into Alaska, there's no Bruce Moses and UD Creek to get them up there. So there's no problem with the other animals that we have up there.
Now, did you ship them up here, or did you have them go through Canada and bring them through there?
No, we tried to go through Canada. It's kind of a deal. Again, the Lewis's, Steve Lewis kind of got me interested into it. And then Earl Lewis said, who owned Stark Lewis Company, Anchorage, which is a roof company.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, if I wanted to do it, he'd be willing to go in with us if you want to buy something, you know, like a silent partner or active dealer. And so I was taking a trip down to, actually, Kathy had a trip. She was the secretary, and they were paying her way to go down there. So I went too.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided we'd look for buffalo when we were down there in Oregon, Washington. And on my way down there, I happened to be on the same plane as C.R. Lewis, whom I'd met before. He'd come over here and actually come out for our rodeos and stuff, and he was a state senator at the time. And he had C.R. Lewis and Company, which is a big government company. And he said, he asked me what I was doing. I told him I was going to go down and look for some buffalo. And I told him that Earl Lewis, and he knew Earl.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't related. Said he wanted to kind of help as an adjutant owner, and so C.R. said, well, count me in too. I mean, I didn't ask him, I didn't, whatever, he said he'd be fine to do it. So I went down there, and I met a broker down there, and he said he'd get us buffalo. We looked at a ranch in Bly, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
which is right across the border from Washington. And there was about 500 head there. And this broker was going to get us some, so we put a down payment down. And the down payment includes some of CR's money and Earl's money and my money.
Mm-hmm.
Equal. And at the end of that year, and come spring, we weren't hearing anything. I kept writing, and I wouldn't get any answers back, so I called him, and I wasn't getting anything. So finally, I flew down there, and I met the guy. And he did get us some buffalo. And the day that we bought them in Powell, Wyoming, which is an also early feedlot right there, a big feedlot, one of the biggest ones in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some buffalo which came from Bly, Oregon, the ones that we were looking at. And they were trying to sell them to somebody in Canada, and they shipped them through up around, Montana.
Glacier National Park.
And they went up there through Glacier, and they got stopped at the border, and they had lutum, which is an endemic type disease that buffalo carry. It doesn't hurt them, but it's also a sheep disease, and
cheap, it does hurt. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't allow them into Canada. And so they wouldn't put them down off the Verde sea lock there in Tyler, Wyoming. That's the only place that's close by, which is quite a ways away. And they were going to just keep them there until they got them completely, I guess they have a treatment for them.
Right.
But every time they'd have them all done, one other would pop up with a thing. So anyway, I bought 40 head there. The day that we bought them, and while I was up there around the Buffalo, north of Missoula, Buffalo Range up there, I can't remember it right now. But anyway, I was up there, I met a fellow that hauled buffalo, mm-hmm. and he decided he'd haul them for us. So I called him, he came down, the day that we went to pick him up and move him was the day Mount St. Helens erupted.
Oh, no!
And we got asked that morning.
Uh-huh.
And they closed everything in Montana. We went to Bozeman, and of course, at Galveston Gateway, where I had ranched, and I knew Bob McCorton was how I worked for. And I called him, and I spent the night with him, and brought the buffalo. We had him on board on the big truck. And he loaned me a little bit of money, but we were going to go to the bank, and he was going to take out a loan. Because, see, Kathy was supposed to send me money, and she had sent me money, but it hadn't reached me by the time we left. And so Bob was going to give me the money. We went down to the bank, and didn't have it, just a couple hundred on hand. And the banks were closed because of the asphalt. So these guys said, okay, well, we trust you. And we went, decided to head on out. Well, they closed the roads, and we had to go down to Idaho and wherever down there. But I'd met a gal in just north of Missoula there, and I'd looked at an Arabian horse, a stud that I was going to pick up. So I called her up, and I told her, look, we can't get the horse because we can't even get up there. And she said, can you make it as far as Butte? And I said, yeah, we were going to go to Butte and turn south. And she said, well, I'll contact the state control them and see if they'll let me take the horse down to there. I said, well, I ain't got any money. Money hadn't come. She said, well, I trust you.
Oh, man.
So she brought the horse down, and these guys carried it, and we finally wound up in Washington there, just below Portland there, where the Totem Alaska comes out of.
Yeah.
And we got them aboard Tote, and they took them up. We took them to Anchorage, and then we went up to Palmer, spent a night in Palmer, and then we came on down. And I lost two on the way out. Of course, they were in that thing for about a week.
Because of the ocean, I mean, the rocking and stuff, and just being sick?
Well, for one thing, we had to go way out of our way, you know. And then there was only one time we let them off when we were down there. And because there were some places to accomplish buffalo.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Once you got them off, it was hard getting them off.
Can't roller skate the buffalo herd. Tell me, you had a your goal. You were mentioning about your goals for your ranch. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, we want to again make this a game ranch, and I want to try to fit in with the animals that we already have here. I have become a guide in the meantime, and I do take in hunters for bear and deer. Of course, they get hungry for buffalo. I would like to raise elk too, and raise elk for the horn production, for the meat, and eventually maybe for hunting. But I want to try to make this as clean an operation as we can. Try to clean up any areas that we have fouled up, you know, in the past. And make it worse. Somebody would like to come here, and maybe just in the summertime, just do some riding or whatever. I'm going to have to make some money taking advantage of the church trade, to supplement, until we can build up to about 400 head of buffalo. By that time, the buffalo will take care of it, and hopefully be giving some help to the elk, make it where possibly buffalo. Wants to stay here on the ranch, or we can make it a family corporation. It is a family corporation. And, a decent living off of it. We don't care to make a fortune off of it. We just enjoy it here.
Has the market been hard? I mean, lower 48 has their market, and then has it been hard to compete with that? Being
cattle wise, it was definitely. During the fall, ours is a grass fed operation, and we'll be for buffalo tree. And our cattle are just butterball fat in the fall, and they do. They really get fat here. They look a lot. They look like they're already been on the feedlot. And it's good to eat, except against the bear. But with buffalo, we'll be selling mostly hunts in the fall, and we'll be selling meat in the fall. Once we build up crop enough, we'll be selling a lot of meat, mainly meat operation, with hunts are just adding income.
Has it made a big turnaround for you? I mean, it's starting to.
It's starting to turn around. Mm-hmm. It hasn't made a big turnaround yet, but we really just now get. Where we have enough to have any production at all on buffalo.
So it's taken a long time. That's coming to.
Well, we started off with 40 head. Of course, we were.
Now, when you.
Okay, so how was the trip?
It's good.
Hey, that's
I need to get with you on an off the date.
Okay.
Nail down the date, that way I know what's coming and what's going on.
All right.
Okay, I'll get with you.
No, that list I gave you, did you get at
I need to use the list of parts. Mr. Elford will have that.
No, is he the one that's going to get me that?
Most likely what it's going to do is...
That's for John.
Or a call from Lansky. Heard it all been close to. My
squad. I have no idea what we're doing. I've got very little. Oh,